Today is Thursday, April the 12th, 2018. We're going to hear Rav Moshe Soloveitchik Shir on Parshas Shemini and Yom Ha'atzma'ot.
I'd like to welcome all of you. I'd like to welcome all of you, and I want to thank you all for coming. There have been a few more people who were extremely generous. Hi, Esther. Extremely generous, and they brought plasticware, napkins, and all kinds of wonderful items for class. So I want to thank all of you for being so generous and sweet. I'd like to make an announcement that next week we will not have a Reb Soloveitchik class. So, do you have any ideas for next Thursday? You know, sure. Let me know after the class.
But next Thursday, Yom Ha'atzmaut.
Oh, okay.
So
we'll be celebrating.
I'd like to also mention that when you're done with your meals tonight, when you clean off the tables, leave the tablecloths on. I'd like to thank Rabbi Berger and the synagogue here for being so generous and allowing us to have this wonderful class here for all of these years. We really do appreciate the generosity of the rabbi and the synagogue. I would like to take the time to wish everybody a good Erev Shabbos, a good Shabbos. And, if you'll please be kind enough to take your phones and silence them for this class. And I'm about to do that myself. So please join me in silencing our phones. Including you, Pichas.
You're right.
We're going to be davening Maariv approximately 2 to 3 minutes after the class. And everyone can join us.
Even
Pinchas.
I would like just, there's a close friend of ours who passed away this past week, member of my synagogue, Judy Mendelson. I don't know if people knew her. Her name is Yehudis Rachel Bas Yosef. So I'd like to. She was a woman who was a very special woman. She had many challenges in life, and nevertheless she persevered. She would help children learn Torah, children who were not able to get in for one reason to another to day school. She would dedicate herself to helping them. And to her, the concept of Mesorah is perpetuating the tradition of her parents and her grandparents were very important. And she was a very, very special person. And, you know, people are influenced by the changes of society. And certain people, the changes of society are sort of irrelevant. And she did not, her value system did not change. That's a unique attribute. It was the same value system that her parents had, that her grandparents had. And her house was always open to everybody. It was like the house of like the tent of Avraham Avinu that had four doors on each side. that when I first became rabbi of my shul, the president of the shul said that there are only 2 days a year that there's a special challenge in getting a minyan for mincha. One was Purim, because after the Purim Suda, it's difficult. People are eating their Purim Suda late into the night without getting into the halachic issues that surround that fact. And the other was Thanksgiving, because everybody's home eating turkey. And so the first year I was rabbi of the shul, I worked very hard calling up people and all that. And then I noticed I didn't have to work so hard. 3/4 of the minyan came out of her house. Who came to the meals in her house? People who didn't have meals in their house. Those that didn't have people, for the most part, who didn't have families. So she was a very, very special person. So I would like to dedicate the shir tonight. And she gave special attention to my son Naftali. She treated him like her child, she taught him and everything. So I just want to dedicate the shiur tonight in her memory. All right, the end of Parsha Shmini discusses the animals, the laws of kashrus, the animals that can be eaten and that can't be eaten, the tohar and the tameh. And there is a dispute. How are we to understand the rationale for these mitzvahs? Huh? So the Rambam in Moreh Nevuchim says something very, very strange. And it's interesting. I've mentioned that Rambam here. The Rambam was a rationalist. And the Abarbanel was also a rationalist. And the Abarbanel attacks the Rambam, or at least the opinion of the Rambam, for what he suggests. The Rambam suggests that the reason certain animals are permitted and allowed is because these animals were healthier, cleaner, whereas the animals that were considered not kosher, for the most part, was considered unhealthy and they were involved in making themselves filthy. The Rambam points it out in regard to the pig. So it was a health issue. The Abarbanel is very, very upset about the opinion of the Rambam. He says the Torah is not a medical book. It's not a health guide. And then he feels that it's not true about the kosher animals being healthier than the non-kosher animals. I'm not a scientist. I'm not a doctor. It's hard for me to answer that question. That question I'm not going to even attempt. I'm not even going to attempt to answer. These type of things actually could change terms of the cleanliness of the animal from one society to another society. So it's hard for me to respond to the Abarbanel's attack on the Rambam that there is no difference. But I would like to discuss the attack that he has against the Rambam from the perspective of this Sefer Torah. And forget about the Abarbanel. It's not a medical book. And now, my great grandfather Reb Chaim, he says, and I've mentioned it here before. He says in regard to the Rambam a regard to the Rambam in Moren Vuchim, when he gives reasons that certain mitzvos are conducive to better life. So he says, it's not that it's a mitzvah because it's better, it's conducive to better life, better living conditions. He says there's a statement in the Zohar, Istakel b'taraso baro lomo. God looked in his Torah and created the world. He said it's the very opposite. He says, God created the world in such a way that it should promote the observance of the mitzvahs of the Torah. It's not that the things were made as mitzvos because they're conducive to better life, but on the contrary, because God wanted to command. And this was Reb Chaim's attitude in general. Reb Chaim's attitude in general is that we don't have the ability to evaluate why God decreed certain mitzvos. The fact that it works well with the conditions prevailing in the world, where it's the scientific conditions, the health conditions, whatever it might be, the psychological conditions, it's just the reverse. It's because God wanted that as mitzvos. Now, we can't understand why God wanted these as mitzvos, but he took God, in creating the world, formulated the world in accordance with the mitzvahs of the Torah. Okay, that was Reb Chaim's approach in general. Whether that was the approach of the Rambam, it wasn't. That's not our issue. But I was thinking, why is it that the Torah, according to the Rambam, emphasizes, and I have to point out, that emphasizes the health issue. Now, I don't think the Rambam, it's obvious, a person can eat all kosher food, and it'll be not healthy. But according to Rambam, if you study the mitzvos of kashrus, you become aware that you have to be concerned. You have to be concerned about what is considered healthy and what is not considered healthy. But why is the Torah so concerned? Why is the Torah so concerned about it? And I think, and then one of the questions raised, I think, against the Rambam is, why doesn't the Torah say something about it? The Torah just tells us what you can eat and what you can't eat. And the Torah doesn't say, that it's because of health reasons. Now, there is a Rambam in the Perek Hamishi, the fifth Perek of Hilchos Yisodei HaTorah. The Rambam in Hilchos Yisodei HaTorah discusses the mitzvah of Kiddush Hashem. The mitzvah of Kiddush Hashem is the mitzvah of sanctifying one's life to God. And the Rambam starts like this, Kol Beis Yisrael mitzuvin al Kiddush Hashem HaGadol HaZeh, Shenemar v'nikdashti v'sok v'nei Yisrael. All of the Jewish people are commanded in the mitzvah of Kiddush Hashem, of sanctification of God's name. As it says, and I shall be sanctified among the Jewish people. Umizharim shalo l'chalolo, shenem lo s'chalo l'shem kodshi. And we are prohibited from, in a sense, we are prohibited from being mechalel shem shemayim. Mechalel shem shemayim is is to just the reverse of Kiddush Hashem. Desecrate. We are prohibited from desecrating the name of God. Then the Rambam says, Ketzad. What's the case? Now, when we talk about Kiddush Hashem, okay, today is Yom HaShoah. So when we talk about Kiddush Hashem, we usually talk about Kiddush Hashem in the sense of people giving their lives or people being killed because of their commitment to Torah, because of their being Jewish. That's sanctification of God's name. Kishmenu karasa b'shmecha. Our belief is that our name is identified with God's name. And if a Jew is killed, as they were throughout the duration of the Holocaust, so in a sense, we are identified with God. So when a Jew is killed because he's Jewish, he is considered to have died in sanctification of God's name. So he says, but Ketzad, how is this mitzvah of Kiddush Hashem, of sanctification of God's name, to be understood? Ketzad, kishiyamod oved kochoven, when an idolater, those who oppress the Jewish people, v'yanos es Yisrael lavor la'achas mikol mitzvos b'Torah, and he forces a Jew to violate one of the mitzvahs of the Torah, O Yahargenu, or he's going to kill him. He tells him, either you be Mechalel Shabbos, or I will kill you. Either you eat food that's not kosher, or I will kill you. Yavor Val Yaharek. The Ram says, in that case, you violate the mitzvahs of the Torah, and you don't let yourself be killed. Shenemar b'mitzvos hasheyasa osam ha'adam v'chai b'hem. Because regarding the mitzvahs of the Torah, it says, v'chai b'hem, you shall live in them. V'chai b'hem v'lo sheyomus b'hem. The mitzvahs of the Torah were given to live in them, and not to die in them. The imeis v'lo avar, if a person decided, now not everybody agrees with the Rambam about this, but the Rambam's opinion is that if one is not required to sacrifice his life, he's not allowed to sacrifice his life. So he says, the imeis v'lo avar harez mischayv benafsho. It's something that he brought upon himself, so to say. So, and then he says, "Mamed varmamur." When is all of this true? That you don't give over your life and you violate the mitzvah that you were threatened about. Bishur mitzvos. This is in regard to the other mitzvos. But chutz me'avodas kachavim v'gil arayis v'shvichas damim. With the exception of idolatry and Gili Arayis, incest or adultery, and Shpichas Damim and murder. Those are three cardinal sins that one has to... Now, it's very interesting. The Rambam asks a question. His question is, Ketzad, what is the mitzvah of sanctifying God's name? And then he starts off by saying, when you don't have to sanctify God's name, he says, if they force you to violate the mitzvos of the Torah, so you violate it rather than let yourself be killed. But all of that is only true in regard to the other mitzvos. But in the three mitzvos, in the three mitzvot, the three cardinal mitzvot are sins, so there you have to give your life. The Rambam should have said just the reverse. The Rambam should have said, Ketzad, how is the mitzvah of Kiddush Hashem?
The mitzvah Kiddush Hashem is to give your life if your life is threatened in these three cases. But then the Ramchand said, but it's only in these three cases. But in all the other mitzvahs, you don't sacrifice your life. But the Rambam reversed the order. Very strange. The Rambam first tells me, when he says, what is the mitzvah of this Kiddush Hashem? Of sanctifying God's name? The mitzvah of Kiddush Hashem is when you don't give your life. And then he says, and there are a few situations where you have to give your life. He should have said just reversed. The mitzvah is the few situations where you have to give your life, and if you don't, either. So, I heard from my father. My father said that the mitzvah of Kiddush Hashem has a double component. And it's a simple thought, just that no one thinks to explain it around that way. There's a mitzvah of dying in sanctification of God's name, and there's a mitzvah of living in sanctification of God's name. And the mitzvah of living in sanctification of God's name is more important, takes priority over the mitzvah of dying. Of course, in sanctification of God, of course. There are situations where you have no choice. You have to die in sanctification of God's name. The Jews who perished in the Holocaust, they had no choice about anything. The Jews who throughout the history of exile were killed in pogroms and whatnot. They had a choice, but of course, their choice was a choice of giving up their religion that they wouldn't do. So they had no choice. They had no choice. The choice they had was not a choice at all. So then you have to be ready to give over your life. But as a general rule, the greater mitzvah of sanctification of God's name is in living in sanctification of God's name rather than in dying in sanctification of God's name. And so that's why the Rambam starts off by saying, when he discusses the mitzvah of Kiddush Hashem, when you don't give over your life. And then he talks about the mitzvah of when you do have to give over your life. And it's interesting, you know, the Yom Kippur at Mincha, they read the Parsha of Arayas. Huh? About the prohibitions of incest and everything. The question is, why do we read that on Yom Kippur? Why do we read that on Yom Kippur? Very odd. It has nothing to do with Yom Kippur. I think I have a number of explanations for it. My father had his own explanation for it. But I think one of the possible reasons might be because v'chai b'hem v'lo shiyomus b'hem, you shall live in the mitzvahs of the Torah, is mentioned in that parsha. It's true! Incest is one of the things that you have to give over your life rather than violate. But the same parsha talks about v'chai b'hem v'lo shiyomus b'hem. It has the pasuk of living in the mitzvahs of the Torah. And Yom HaKippurim, Rosh Hashanah Yom HaKippurim, what do we constantly say? We're asking God for life. But when we ask God for life, it's not just that we're asking God for life so we should be able to enjoy ourselves. Of course, There's no sin in enjoying oneself. That's part of life. That's part of living. But we have to know we are given life in order to serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu and to serve God. We belong to God. And each person is given a mission in life. I mentioned very often my father's thought that I mentioned my father's thought Vayivra Elkim Esa'odam B'tzalmo B'tzalam Elkim Baro. So God created man in his image. And the image of God he was created. So it seems to be redundant. God created man in his image. In the image of God he was created. It's redundant. My father said, God created man in his image with a small h. Each person is created in their own image. And that's the image of God in them. What does that mean? That means that each person is given a mission. And no two people have the same mission in life. But that's the image of God that's in them. Their mission. You know, people try to imitate others. Imitation is not the way to go. We can learn from others, but we should not imitate others. We have to dedicate ourselves. So when we are put into this world, we are put into this world with a mission. And we have no right to abandon our mission. Not only that, we have to protect. We are required to protect our mission. That's why v'chai b'hem v'chalo yomos b'hem. Let's say you want to give your life over. You're not allowed to in many circumstances. Why? Because you have a mission. And to abandon your mission, to give your life over, is to bring closure to that mission, ending the mission prematurely. And you're not fulfilling your responsibility to that mission. And in a sense, the Torah at the end of this parsha says, V'hiskadishtem v'yisem doshem. The Torah says, You shall make yourself holy, and you shall be holy. Ki Hashem hamalas chameretz Yisrael lios lachem leilkim v'yisem doshim ki kodesh. I'm sorry. V'yisem doshim ki kodesh ani. You shall be holy because I am holy. In other words, what does it mean? You should be holy because I am holy. The idea is, what is the holiness that's in man? The holiness in man emanates from his being God's agent, having a mission from God. So, in a sense, we could suggest that the Torah here is trying to tell us, when the Torah gives the laws of kashrus, and the Rambam interprets the laws of kashrus, not that, I have to point out, it's very important to point out, you can't eat something that's not kosher, even if it's very healthy. That's true. But there is a lesson to be deduced from the laws of kashrus, according to the Rambam. And the lesson to be deduced from the laws of kashrus is that we have to preserve our mission. And how do we preserve our mission, perpetuate our mission? On the contrary, by being concerned about our own health. So this is how we could understand. This is how we could understand the Shita, the explanation of the Rambam. In other words, it's not that the Torah is a medical book or a book of health, whatever. The Torah is telling us, emphasizes the importance of health. And we know the Torah tells us, Ushmartem es nafshoseichem, you have to watch your health over and over. It's not just because the Torah is giving us advice. The Torah is telling us that we have to preserve our mission. And preserving our health is the way we preserve our mission. Now, I want to suggest, I saw that some suggest, and again, they're attacked for this suggestion, I just want to suggest another explanation. Actually, I'm not going to go into the suggestion I want to make is that we know that originally man was not allowed to eat any living creature. After the Mabel, after the flood, man was allowed to eat animals, of course, if they're taken, if it's handled properly, was allowed to eat. Now, it could be suggested, my father would always give an example, not in regard to this, in regard to everything else. We lived in New York at the time, in Rockefeller Plaza. At that time, like once a year for about 2 hours would be shut down to maintain its private status. In other words, people have to realize that Rockefeller Plaza was not a public street, even though the public was allowed to use it. In other words, sometimes we have to know that the world is not ours, that we are only given a license to benefit from the world. So the only way man understands that, if he's told there's limitations. But you invite somebody into your house, and the person can do whatever he wants. It becomes his house. There was a joke about mothers-in-law. they would say, if your in-laws come in into your house, so the first day they say, can I use your cup? The second day they say, I'm using our cup. And the third day, what are you doing with my cup? So, no particular people were in men. But so Hakadosh Baruch Hu has in a certain sense, Hakadosh Baruch Hu wanted to remind man. Yes, he gave man a license to eat, but you have to realize, and when we get a carte blanche license to do whatever we want, to take whatever we desire, then we begin to think, after a while, it's ours. It's ours. We have to recognize, L'Hashem Ha'aretz U'Mlo'a, to God belongs the whole world. That's why the Chachamim instituted that before you eat, you have to make a bracha only on the food that you're allowed. Man has to, when you have the license to do something, you begin to think it's not just a license, that it's yours. We have to know that it really belongs to God. And along these lines, so that's why we could suggest that the laws of kashrus were instituted in order to say, hey, this I'm allowing you to eat, and this I'm not allowing you to eat. So you'll know, even the things that I'm allowing you to eat, it's not yours. It's God's. But I once mentioned, I think, it's along the same lines, but it's a step further. We see, where was the laws of kashrus first introduced in the Torah? The concept of kosher animals versus non-kosher animals. Parshas Noach. Where man is given, where Noach realizes, because he was told to use the kosher animal to protect more kosher animals than non-kosher animals. And so it dawned on him, why is it that way? He was allowed to eat everything. Why is it that way? And he realized it's for sacrifices. So the laws, the concept of kosher versus non-kosher is not introduced to us when it comes to eating. It's introduced to us when it comes to korbanos, the sacrifices. And to a certain degree, I've seen the question is, why is the laws of kashrus mentioned in Chumash Vayikra? Why is it mentioned in Chumash Vayikra? Vayikra talks about korbanos, about sacrifices. And where is it talking? It's talking about at the dedication of the Mishkan. Parsha Shmini is talking about the dedication of the Mishkan. So how are we to understand it? I mentioned, I had a Rebbe, a very good Rebbe in high school. His name was Reb Chaim Siegel. Rabbi Berger knew him. He was the teacher also of one of Rabbi Berger's sons. Later on, he became the principal of Yeshivas Chaim Berlin. And he said to us that he once went over, him and a couple of fellows, to one of the Rebbeim in Chaim Berlin, who learned in Radin Yeshiva. I'm pretty sure that I know who it was. It was probably Rav Shurkin. Rav Shurkin was one of the great teachers of the last generation. And he was a Rebbe, a teacher in Chaim Berlin. And he went over, they went over to, I assume it was Rav Shurkin, he just said to one who was a student in the yeshiva of the Chavetz Chaim, and said to him, could you tell us something about a story about the Chavetz Chaim? You see, the Chavetz Chaim was a unique type of gadol. Most of the other Golem, when to fully appreciate who they were, you have to be a yeshiva student. But there were certain great people that even if somebody never opened up a Gemara, they recognized the uniqueness and the greatness of the person. He was great not just for those who were involved in the study of Torah, but he was a great person for the totality of the Jewish people, the totality of the Jewish nation. And the Chavetz Chaim, probably in the last generation, was the one that was seen from that perspective most. Anyway, so tell us a true story. And, you know, certain people, Moshe Feinstein also was a very, people, even outside yeshiva people, recognized his unique personality. So his goodness
And Rav Moshe Feinstein once said, someone told him something about a certain great person from 100 years before him. Rav Aaron Felder mentions this in the, and Rav Moshe Feinstein says, I don't believe it. Everybody says it. He says, they say all kinds of stories about me also, and I'm still alive. So, so about somebody that lived 100 years beforehand. So they wanted to hear a story that they knew actually happened. He said, so that this Rebbe of Chaim Berlin, Rav Shurkin, I assume it was Rav Shurkin, he said, the most of the stories he said, I don't believe. He said, but let me tell you a story. He said, we wanted to hear how the Chavetz Chaim talks in his house. So there was a window. I guess in those days they didn't have air conditioning. So the window was open. It probably was a hot day. They wanted to hear what the Chavetz Chaim says. Apparently the Chavetz Chaim was eating his meal. And he said to his Rebbetzin, give me a portion of this so I should feel stronger in order to serve God better. Now, if we would do it, it would be fraudulent. It would be a fake. But we're not on that level. But with the Chavetz Chaim, I can just imagine, you know, people, and the story gets around, all of a sudden, all these guys at their table. Anyway, so the Chavetz Chaim was sincere. When he ate in order to be able to serve HaKadosh Baruch. And to a certain degree, that's part of the idea of bracha. It's, in other words, it's God's food. What right do I have for that food? So the Chavetz Chaim ate for that reason. So in a certain sense, when we're eating God's food. In a sense, we become the altar. That the sacrifice, and when it comes, there's a halach of shechita, of slaughtering the animal before you eat it. Where do we have a halach of shechita? By karbanos. By sacrifices. So it's true, in halacha we say that only things that you're allowed to eat can be put on the altar. But the truth of the matter is, it's just the reverse. It's just phrased that way. You can eat what things that could be identified at one time as a sacrifice. In other words, to emphasize the point, the laws of kashrus are identified with the laws. Now, of course, there are many animals that you're allowed to eat that we don't put on the altar. But Noah did put on the altar. Noah was allowed to put on the altar. So all the kosher animals, Noah was allowed to put on the altar. So we're introduced to the concept of kashrus with the idea of sacrifices, of giving something to God. So I think, and we could take it even a step further, to a certain degree, I could use the Lubavitcher Chassidus. The world was created for God to have a dira betachtonim, a residence in the lower world. So to a certain degree, the world is a mikdash. Matter of fact, the Midrashim compare the Mishkan to creation. And it showed, if you look in the Midrashim, there are correspondences between the 10 maimaros, the 10 statements that God made in creating the world, and the commandment
to build the Mishkan. Vasisa, Vasisa. Why?
In other words, because in a sense, the whole world has to be a Mishkan, has to be a sanctuary for man and God to have a meeting. But where is the altar in the world? The altar in the world is us. When we eat, and we dedicate ourselves to God, the food that we eat, whatever we do, is being given over to God. So that's why we could suggest that the Parsha of Kashrus, which emphasizes this point, which is based on this hashkafa, on this perspective, is in Chumash Vayikra, because Chumash Vayikra is the Chumash of sacrifices, of giving to God. So here too, we give to God when we eat.
Thank you. I just want to remind everybody that we will not have a class next week, unfortunately. And we're going to be davening Marav in about 2 minutes.